If you would, please, open the book of Psalms, chapter 37, Psalms 37. David says, "Fret not yourself because of the wicked. Be not envious of wrongdoers, for they will soon fade like the grass and wither like the green herb. Trust in the Lord and do good, so that you will dwell in the land and enjoy security. Take delight in the Lord, for he will give you the desires of your heart. Commit your way to the Lord. Trust in him, and he will act. He will bring forth your vindication as the light, and your right as the noonday. Be still before the Lord and wait patiently for him. Fret not yourself over him who prospers in his way, over the man who carries out evil devices. Refrain from evil, from anger, and forsake wrath. Fret not yourself, it tends only to evil. For the wicked shall be cut off, but those who wait for the Lord shall possess the land. Yet a little while, and the wicked will be no more. Though you look well at his place, he will not be there. But the meek shall possess the land and delight themselves in abundant prosperity. The wicked plots against the righteous and gnashes his teeth at him. But the Lord laughs at the wicked, for he sees that his day is coming. The wicked draw his sword and bend their bows to bring down the poor and the needy, to slay those who walk uprightly. Their swords shall enter their own heart, and their bows shall be broken. Better is a little that is right that the righteous has than the abundance of the wicked. For the arms of the wicked shall be broken, but the Lord upholds the righteous. The Lord knows the days of the blameless, and their heritage will abide forever. They are not put to shame in evil times. In the days of famine they will have abundance. But the wicked perish. The enemies of the Lord are like the glory of the pasture. They vanish like smoke. They vanish away. The wicked borrows and cannot pay back. But the righteous is generous and gives. For those blessed by the Lord shall possess the land. But those who cursed by him shall be cut off. The steps of a man are from the Lord, and he establishes him in whose way he delights. Though he fall, he shall not be cast headlong, for the Lord is his stay of his hand. I have been young, and now I'm old, and I have not seen the righteous forsaken or his children begging bread. He is ever giving liberally and lending, and his children become a blessing. Depart from evil and do good, so shall you abide forever. For the Lord loves justice, and he will not forsake his saints. The righteous shall persevere forever, but the children of the wicked shall be cut off. The righteous shall possess the land and dwell upon it forever. The mouths of the righteous utters wisdom, and his tongue speaks justice. The law of his God is in his heart. His steps do not slip. The wicked watches the righteous and seeks to slay him. The Lord will not abandon him to his power, nor let him be condemned when he is brought to trial. Wait for the Lord and keep his way, and he will exalt you and possess the land. You will look on the destruction of the wicked. I have seen a wicked man, overbearing and towering like the cedar of Lebanon. Again I passed by, and lo, he was no more. Though I sought him, he could not be found. Mark the blameless man and behold the upright, for there is posterity in the man of peace. But transgressors shall be altogether destroyed. The posterity of the wicked shall be cut off. The salvation of the righteous is from the Lord. He is their refuge in their time of trouble. The Lord helps them and delivers them. He delivers them from the wicked and saves them because they take refuge in him. David, of course, is speaking of a very popular and a very common occurrence that we have, and that is we usually look at things in the short term. We usually look at the situation around us, and we're usually kind of drawn to one or two directions, and we don't always see the whole story. Here he's describing for us how we should look at life, and if we could, by faith, look at life the way God would look at it and look at it from his perspective. He tells us to start with, look at verse 1 and 2. He tells us not to envy the wicked. Well, it's hard not to do that, isn't it? When you see people making a lot of money or having a lot of power, it seems like everything they touch works out for them. But David is telling us the wicked have nothing you need. What do you really need? They have nothing you need. And he starts a theme that he's going to cover two or three times in this letter, in this psalm, and that is the temporary nature of this world. If Paul was talking about this, he would be talking about the transient and the transcendent. Here David is talking about present and future, and he reminds us that the wicked are really like grass. We couldn't have a prettier time right now with our countryside, could we? We look at those pastures full of grass. Some are knee deep right now, and we look at that and we think, "Well, man, a person just couldn't help but be successful in country like this." But if you've lived here very long, you know that this can change. It can change before the 4th of July. It can change in just a little while. We've seen some of those pastures that are so green and lush and full of wildflowers and full of pasture. And the very same pasture you can go into in just a little while and you can't find a blade of anything. I heard about a couple of guys from up north were down here traveling, and they were down around Ozona someplace, and they saw a bunch of sheep eating on the side of a hill. And one of them, they couldn't figure out what in the world those sheep were eating. It looked like there's nothing up there but rocks. So they sent a fella, one of them got out of the car and went up there to look. His friend said, "What are they eating?" He said, "I think they done ate it. There's nothing here." We also know how that a fire can happen in just a little while and everything changes. The same way with the success or the prosperity or the power or the influence of the wicked. For a while they seem to blossom and prosper and strut around as if they're invincible, like Goliath walking back and forth in the valley. But everything can change quickly. And he wants us to remember that the promises we have don't come from our own strength and from our own influence, but come from God. And so he reminds us about this temporary nature. He said, don't envy the wicked. They have nothing you need. They knew really nothing you should even want. He said, you actually have enough to do. Look at verse 3. And that is trust the Lord and do good. You can do that. He also says you can take delight in the Lord, and we should. And then he gives us a promise. God many times gives us a commandment and a promise together. Trust in the Lord, take delight in the Lord, commandments. And then he gives us a promise. And he said that God will, what did he say? This is too good to be true, isn't it? And he says, take delight in the Lord, verse 4, and he gives you the desires of your heart. That's in the Bible. That's a promise. I don't want to get weird with you, but I could tell you 20 stories of things that I wanted, stuff that I wanted. Sometimes I would even scheme about it. Want this thing so much. And then I would give it up. It was too much. It was too frivolous. It was too silly. I had other things that I had to do. And then I would have it. I know in my life I should have wanted better things. The desires of my heart should not have been stuff. Because almost everything that I ever wanted, I got. Somebody would say, "Here, would you like to have this?" And I would look at it, and it was the very same thing that I'd been wanting. And 20 years ago, I decided, "You don't really need this. What's wrong with you?" How would God know that? Well, He's God. He says, we trust in the Lord. We delight in the Lord. We obey the Lord, and He'll take care of us. He'll take care of us better than we would ourselves. He will take care of us in a better way than we could, because He knows who delights in Him. And what did He say here? He gives to His servants the desires of their heart. So, you're looking at a guy that has very little, and yet I have more beds than I can sleep in, more houses than I can live in, more cars than I can drive, and more land than I can walk over. He says here, David says, take delight in the Lord, and He will give you the desires of your heart. He said, commit yourself to the Lord and trust in Him. And what else will He do? Not only satisfy the wants that you have or the desires that you have, but He'll bring you forth your vindication. The world has a way of putting its foot on your neck, doesn't it? The world has a way of condemning us. In another psalm, David would say, He prepares a table before me in the presence of my enemies. Vindication. I think the greatest example of that is the one who loved the Father the most and sacrificed the most for His goodwill, and that was Jesus. He is condemned, He is beaten, He is ridiculed, He is embarrassed, He is hurt, He is told that He's a traitor and a blasphemous person. And then He comes forth from the tomb alive. He is totally vindicated. The tomb is empty. Kings and princes are afraid of Him. Everywhere that the gospel goes and Jesus' people go, things change. Hungry people are fed, and hopeless people have hope, and lost people are saved. He's vindicated, and He's vindicated in the same way that light overcomes darkness. And He tells us the same thing can and will happen to us. David goes from running for his life to being the king, and the one that some of the very people who chased after him are kneeling before him and asking him to lead them. God will vindicate us, he said. And then he says, the other thing we have to do is to be patient about it. Patience is a demonstration of faith that might be the hardest one. If we all had to stand up and take the axe on our neck tonight for God, most of us would do it. But waiting around for Him to do what He promises to do, it's very, very difficult. I talked to a fellow just very recently that said it's hard to continue to live in this world when you don't really want to be here. It's hard to continue to be faithful when you don't really like what's going on around you. That's patience, isn't it? He says here in verse 7, be patient, wait on Him, and He will reward you. Sometimes faith is demonstrated with action. Sometimes faith is demonstrated with bold sermons. Sometimes faith is demonstrated with quick decisions. But most of the time, it's demonstrated by putting one foot in front of the other, by being faithful, by washing dishes and changing children. It's demonstrated by showing up for church on Sunday night. It's demonstrated by smiling when your brother frowned. It's demonstrated by saying, I still believe God. I still believe Him. Who was the great demonstrator of this? God kept making fantastic promises to Abraham. and decades pass, and most of the biggest promises he never sees with his own eye. But did God keep his promise? Did he give him a nation of people that would be counted like the sand on the seashore? Yes. Did he give him a great land? Everywhere he walked belonged to him. Did he give him a blessing for the whole world? Even Abraham in his best day couldn't imagine how big this blessing would be. Here David says, wait on the Lord patiently and don't fret over it. Don't worry about it. God's got your back. He knows what you need and he'll take care of you. He gives us another advice here. He says, watch out for anger. Anger is a garden where wrath grows greatly, but maybe more than wrath, wickedness grows in that garden. There are some sins that by themselves are bad enough, but they're sort of gateway sins. They're sort of the potting soil of something much worse. And anger is one of those things. Bitterness is one of those things. If you're an angry person, other things grow in your heart. He says, watch out for this. Don't do this. Refrain from it, he says in verse 8. Then he reminds us again. He said this in the first couple of verses. Now he's going to say it again down here in verse 10. He reminds us of the temporary nature of most situations, especially the situation of the wicked who seem to be prospering at the moment. He says, you're going to turn around twice and you can't even find those guys. Their deal is gone. Their noise is past. And someday go to a doctor's office and sit in the waiting room and look at those old magazines that are laying there and read about what we worried about 6 months ago or 5 years ago. Read about the things that we thought would be the end of the world. Just recently, with some political decision that was made, everyone was believing that and saying out loud, the world will be, all of us will be underwater in a week or two, you know? And as if we have that much control over this whole thing. Here we have him tell us, wicked people, they're no good in the long run. It never ends well for them. And they disappear from our sight. He even says, if we come on down to verse 13, he even says, the very few times in the Bible does it say that God laughs. It talks about delight. It talks about pleasing him. But when he talks about God laughing, this is not a good thing for the person he's laughing with or at. He says here, but the Lord laughs at the wicked, for he sees his day coming. Look at what causes God to laugh at the wicked. He sees their future. It's as if he's going to say when they make their little speech, oh, really? It's like when Herod receives the praise that he is God. And God laughs and says, I want to introduce you to a worm that's going to change everything for you. And Herod's life was gone. It's like the laughing that God does is not a giggle, but a ha-ha kind of a laugh. The trap is finished. The wicked's are past. He said the wicked put their weight, look at verse 14, the wicked put their confidence in their strength, their swords, their spears, their bows, their physical strength. The wicked often does that. Because they have the power to fire you, they have the power to kill you even. And because they think that will never fail them. They think they'll be able to always get what they want because they have a sword or they have whatever you might have. Goliath would be a good example of this. Nobody's bigger than him. No one's taller than him. No one's stronger than him. No one's better trained than him. No one's better equipped with him. But Goliath's head is cut off by a boy with his own sword. And that's kind of what he says here. their own sword will pierce their heart. He says in the next verse, verse 17, he says, what good is a warrior if his arms are broken? He's just sort of stumbling around there. He doesn't have the thing that made him strong. And that's what he's reminding us of. He goes back to the statement that when he's talking about taking the long view, and David said, and once I was young, they're in verse 25 now I'm old, and I've noticed one thing that was really consistent. I've noticed that God always takes care of the people that are his. There's always something to eat. There's always some place to stay. God promises, what did Jesus promise us in the Sermon on the Mount? To seek him first, and all the stuff that we think we have to live will be added. God takes care of those who belong to him. We go down a little bit farther in verse 28, and he said, the righteous shall persevere forever. That doesn't mean that my time on this earth is forever, but my relationship with God is not interrupted even by death. And he says that this is an eternal situation that we're in. This is exactly what Paul was talking about when he talked about the transient and the transcendent, and how that we move from what's corruptible to what's incorruptible. And that's what he's saying here, is David is giving a foreshadow of that great truth. He said, on the other hand, the wicked have one thing. They've got a few minutes now. They have a little bit of time now. He said, the righteous shall possess the land. I think at least three times in this psalm, he talks about the possession of the land. In one place, he says in verse 11, the meek will inherit the land. That sounds like something Jesus said, doesn't it? And here he says, the righteous will. Over and over again, he reminds us of that very thing, that we are envious of those who are wicked. He tells us, he says, one of the great promises in verse 31 is the righteous feet do not slip. They are sure-footed. Now, this is a promise that we see in both the Old and the New Testament. The book of Jude tells us that God is able to keep us and able to keep us from falling. When he's describing the person who might fall, he says they may trip, but they don't fall headlong. This is a minor setback and not complete destruction. David had many minor setbacks in his life. They seemed pretty serious at the time. There was lots of time he spent in caves, lots of time he spent on the run, lots of time he spent out. But Goliath, when he had a setback, it was terminal. And there's a much bigger difference here, and that's what he's reminding us of. He says in verse 35 that if you'll pay attention to the wicked man, this is almost the exact same thing he starts this chapter with, you'll notice something, that no matter how big they are, no matter how tall they are, no matter how strong they are, he said these guys are big as the cedars of Lebanon. That's like those trees out in California that get so big. He said, like that, I've seen these guys. They're powerful. They're big. They seem to be indestructible. And I pass by again, and I can't find them. They aren't around anymore. Some people don't even remember their names. There's nobody living in their house because they're gone. The big shot is gone, and he can't even be found. But, verse 39, salvation of the righteous is from the Lord. Our attention, our goal, our thought. What did the writer of Hebrews tell us? We run this race, but we run it looking to Jesus. He said, this is where our hope comes from. And it's from the Lord. Not only do we receive salvation, but David would also tell us that is also where we have refuge. There's two kinds of ideas there. One of them is victory in the battle. The other one is protection when maybe victory is not immediate. God promises both of those things to us. He promises to guide, guard, and direct us. He promises to take care of us. How many times do we read in the Psalms and other places of this rocky fortress that he has, the place where we can go and we can be safe, or we can be secure, that hideout that we can go where our enemies can't find us, that cave of Adullam where David would go, that place where we are safe and secure in the arms of Jesus. But then he also describes salvation. That's the victory march after the battle. That's not David hiding in a cave, as he will on some days, but it's holding up the head of the giant that he has just slain. It's victory. God promises both of those to us in his due time, not ours. Our job is to be faithful. He says salvation is from the Lord, and we seek refuge in him. Other people seek refuge in stuff. Stuff can't save you. You can't even eat it. Stuff is just stuff. Other people find refuge in strength that they have. Both physical and military and financial strength are all temporary. You know that. When you tried to put your shoes on this morning, you knew that we don't have the strength we once had. And that is fleeting. If that's what our confidence is in, we're a terrified bunch of people, aren't we? But he says our strength, our refuge, our salvation is found in God. What did he tell us about God? Is eternal and able. In other words, he was there before. He is also in the future. He knows all of this, and he has made us promises that only he could make. Now we have something to do. We take refuge in him. We trust him. We delight in him. We obey him. Those are the things we can do. I can't do anything about the future. I can't do anything about how this world changes and all of the stuff that goes on. But I can obey him. I can seek refuge in him. I can take delight in him. I can trust him. Those are things I can do. And that's what he requires of us. And in exchange, he promises to take care of us, not only with the necessities, but we get a few delights along the way, the things that we really would like to have. And he takes care of us eternally. And our future is safe and secure. Nobody else can do this but God. And David, a long time before Jesus preached the Sermon on the Mount, was preaching a very similar message. Where did he get it? He got it from God. This is something we should all know. I guess we ought to ask ourselves, what are we putting our weight down on? What are we secure? Where do we put our hope? What do we think that if that what will be the very thing that will save me from whatever monster that's out there? If it's anything but God, we're going to fail. We need to do what we can do. We need to respond to him by faith. And we're going to take this opportunity right now. If you need to do that, won't you do it while we stand and sing?